No one.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Gators Online Show. We got a lot to talk about this week. As always, a big visit weekend for the Florida Gators football program. They're hosting a lot of top recruits. We're going to discuss some NCAA football. We're going to discuss Florida's basketball schedule. We've got some other stuff to talk about, too. As always, I'm joined by senior reporter Zach Albaverde. And Zach, before we bring on Blake Alderman of Gators Online, who does such a great job covering recruiting with Corey Bender for us, we're gonna do a little intro. We got to pay the bills, as we say. So take it away.
No doubt. Want to give a shout out, as we do at the top of each and every show, to Big Game Football Factory, the producers of this football right here that you see on the screen. If you're watching on YouTube, and you'll see it every time you watch a Florida football game this season, the Gators will be using this ball, and you can get your hands on it if you head over to biggameusa.com/Gators. And if you use the code Gators Online, you can get 10% off your entire order and free shipping for a limited time. The Gators designed this ball with Big Game USA to ensure they're comfortable with it, so it's truly one of a kind. You can start your collection of Florida's official game balls today at biggameusa.com/Gators.
All right. Well, Zach, again, it's been a huge official visit season for the Florida Gators. They had their first big OB weekend in May, then won the last weekend in May, and then won last week. And then they're going to kind of wrap up, we think, the official visits this coming weekend, and then they'll have another visit weekend just for some other prospects the following weekend. But it's been a busy stretch, okay? Incredibly busy stretch. And to kind of preview this weekend and then sort of reset where things are for Florida Gators recruiting right now, we've got Blake Alderman to join us. Blake, first of all, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. Good. Get ready for this last official visit weekend. And then next weekend, it's about trying to beg for some ribs outside of the building whenever Florida has that grill in the Ville cookout.
And they're not going to give you anything.
Zero. Nothing. Maybe a bone, nothing. If that.
They might throw in some scraps.
Plate of mac and cheese.
At least it's comfortable outside. It's nice and toasty. You get a nice tan. Remember, Zach, there was a weekend last year where Blake and I were huddling under an umbrella outside, a big umbrella, by the way, but it was pouring down rain, lightning's hitting all around us. And you know, we're thinking, man, I mean, you know, Blake, you got all your paperwork in order just in case we don't make it through this. I mean, it was sort of dicey for a few minutes. You know? Blake,
that's when I head into the facility.
Yeah. Blake, 14 official visitors, 4 unofficial visitors. Just kind of your general thoughts to set the stage for this big official visit weekend and unofficial visit weekend.
Yeah, I think some of the notable names to me are actually on the unofficial visit list, and it comes with 2 targets, 4-star defensive lineman Jarela McCoy out of Mississippi and 4-star running back Carson Baker out of Georgia. Both guys, McCoy is notable because he was scheduled to officially visit Texas this weekend, but he decided to cancel that visit. It was thought of to be a Florida-Texas battle. Florida leads, but canceled that official visit to Texas, and he'll be in town this weekend for an unofficial visit. Nearing that commitment date of July 1st, clearly taking that visit plans and changing them, being in Gainesville on a return visit. He's someone to watch this weekend, and I think you could say the same for Carson Baker, just because, again, guy who turned around, takes that unofficial visit after having a really successful official visit there in mid-May. I think both of these guys are worth watching. And just the fact that these guys had those quick turnaround plans, that makes them at least more notable to me, just because I feel like they're on commitment watch. We're watching to see what happens with these guys. Clearly, at least for McCoy, he has a set date. Baker has talked more about sometime in the end of June. I know that I believe June 20th weekend he's scheduled to officially visit South Carolina. We've seen prospects that have had commitment dates change those plans, move up the dates. Janarvi Carr, he popped on Florida's official visit coming out of that. Caden Hall a couple days after his official visit. So we're keeping tabs on those guys. On the official visit scale, like there's some guys like that are newer to me, or maybe I don't know enough about the recruitments, but I think some of the notable ones, 4-star linebacker Isaiah Williams out of Tavares, Florida, over there in the Leesburg area. He's a former Florida commit, but you could say the same thing about 4 or 5 other schools. He's had a total of, I believe, 5 or 6 commitments to date. He's currently committed to Ole Miss. He flipped from Florida to Ole Miss, but he's still taking visits. He's been to Georgia. He'll be at Florida this weekend, and who knows what happens for the next couple weekends. We're probably safe to assume that recruitment is nowhere near done. And then just He's a notable one. Kendall Gervel, he's another guy that's pretty notable. Big time target for Florida, Texas Leeds. He's a 4-star defensive tackle out of the Fort Myers area. The three consistent schools, Texas, Florida, Georgia. Texas Leeds right now, Florida and Georgia are sort of neck and neck there in that two spot. And 4-star wide receiver Marquez Daniel out of Tuskegee, Alabama. He goes to Booker T. Washington in that area. He's been down to Florida and Alabama, or excuse me, Florida and Auburn for what feels like forever. He's been looking at those two for a while. It's been neck and neck, he says, with those two schools. He has visited Auburn for an official visit. That was last weekend. This weekend he'll be at Florida. And it feels like just a guy that has been down to two for so long. He really doesn't have a set decision date, but now he's officially visited after this weekend. He'll have officially visited both of his schools. So I feel like he's one to watch. And that's a guy that Florida does feel like they have a very good shot with. And I think a big part in that is due to the connection he has with Chad Lucas, an off-field staffer at Florida from the Tuskegee area, actually went to the same high school as Daniel. And I believe he went to high school with Daniel's mother. So there's a lot of ties to that area. So those are some notable names, I'd say, for this weekend.
Blake, we're going to get into commitment watch here in a second, but I want to ask you some. Carson Baker, the 4-star running back, coming back for an unofficial. He just visited FSU last week and said after the visit, neck and neck, but of course we were all still hearing out Florida's the team to beat here. Now he's coming back to Florida for an unofficial. If Florida lands Carson Baker like we think they will at some point, is Florida done at running back this cycle, or is this going to be, you know, they just signed three guys at running back, or is this going to be a multi back class, or do you think this could be it for Florida running back?
I would think this is it. Like you said, landed three last cycle, and I believe two the cycle before. So Florida's clearly has done a really good job. Jabbar Jalouk, Florida's running backs coach, has done a really good job recruiting his position. It's a pretty loaded room, and it's got talent in there too. You know, I mean, you see Jaden Baugh get some snaps as a true freshman and make an impact as a true freshman. So Florida seems to have some pretty good players in there. Carson Baker, I think, is someone that he's the offense that he runs at his high school is fairly similar to what Florida runs. So there's an easy translation there. Now, I mean, you always have to keep in mind, are there running back seems like one of those positions where there's going to be a senior riser somewhere, whether it's in the state of Florida. I feel like every year there's one guy in South Florida that's one of those senior risers. That's to be determined. I think that could come down to roster numbers. If Florida had somebody, let's say something would happen with somebody departing to the transfer portal, that's something you always have to watch at any position. Could Florida look in the portal to replace that spot if that were to happen? There's scenarios, and maybe I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but I think if Florida lands Carson Baker, like we think he will go to Florida, I think that's probably going to be it. And I think that he's a mix of talent that Florida really likes. And I think that just from a number standpoint, they're pretty squared away there.
Blake, obviously Florida's had some success with the official visitors already in terms of landing commitments from those guys. Who are some folks that should be on commitment watch this weekend? And I would think one of those guys is from your area, your neck of the woods.
Yeah, 4-star linebacker Malik Morris. He's out of the Lakeland area. Florida has been thought to be the team to beat for quite a while. I think earlier on, it seemed more like a Florida-Miami battle. He's been to Miami a bunch. He had a really good connection with Derek Nicholson, who was the Miami linebacker coach. He's since left. He's at Missouri now. Missouri's supposed to host him next weekend for an official visit. So that relationship's still strong. I feel like Miami, at least from what I'm hearing, they're starting to fade some. I don't know that I'd say they're out of this picture, but it seems like Florida-Texas A&M battle right now for him. He's actually really close with Jay Bateman, who was on Florida staff previously. Just those ties that are in the state of Florida that he's built. He was recruiting Malik Morris whenever he was at Florida. It didn't offer, but it was trending that way. I believe it was a game that Keith was at where Buholtz was playing Lakeland in like the state semifinals or quarterfinals or something like that. That was whenever Bateman actually got a chance to see Malik Morris for the first time. This is a guy that's a big time linebacker. He's a big human. He's out there playing running back for Lakeland. So I think that it's Florida and A&M. I don't know what his timeline is exactly. He's taking his visits this summer. Could he take things in the fall? I suppose that's on the table, but to be determined. I think he's taken, after he's at Florida, has taken the official visits that maybe matter the most to him. He's been to A&M, sure. He's been to Miami, and he'll be at Florida. Isaiah Williams, like I mentioned earlier, the Ole Miss commit, the former Florida commit, and multiple other commitments. I think you've got a guy that's shown that he can make quick decisions like that. I think you have to watch him. You know, he's an unpredictable type of guy. And then past that, Marquez Daniel, who I mentioned, I think that that's one to watch. Again, he's down to two schools, Florida and Auburn. He's been looking at those schools for quite a while. It's just, it feels like, what else do you need to see? You know, could he pop this weekend sometime shortly after? Could he set a commitment date sometime shortly after this visit? I think all those things are on the table. But let's get through this visit first and kind of see what happens there. And then I think those are probably some of the guys. Tyler, and I'm going to mess up his name, so sorry, Tyler Chuckium. He's the three-star offensive tackle out of Douglasville, Georgia. He goes to South Paulding High School there in Georgia. He's got a commitment date for June 16th, which is this coming up Monday. Florida is in his final four. It's Cincinnati, Florida State, Florida, and Ole Miss. He's visited Cincinnati, and he's visited Ole Miss. It seems like right now, Ole Miss, Florida battle, but a lot of to be determined still on Florida's end, at least, is on this visit. This visit will be his first ever visit to Florida. He's mentioned things like culture in the locker room, academics are big to him. All these things sound like a Billy Napier script, the things that he's looking for, things that Billy Napier prioritizes in his program. So I think that, A, we have to see how the visit goes there, but it does seem like Florida has a lot of things that he's interested in. And we spoke to him earlier this week, and he's actually hearing a lot from Florida. He's talking to Jonathan DeCosta, Florida's assistant offensive line coach. He's talking to Rob Sale, Florida's offensive line coach. He's talking to Billy Napier, too. Actually, Billy Napier was on a Zoom call with Tyler and his family and like in the last couple of weeks, and was telling him that he thinks he's one of the most underrated guys in the 26th class. So certainly seems like there's a lot of interest. He has a commitment date. I think we'll know more after this visit, but he seems like someone to keep an eye on.
Blake, I'm a Scotch Corey there. Caden Prothro. I don't know who that's a bigger insult to, you or Corey, that I almost called you Corey. But Caden Prothro, highest ranked guy coming in this weekend, right? Five-star tight end from Bowden, Georgia. Good looking, you know, physical specimen, tall, pass-catching tight end. Florida's in the mix, but so is Auburn. And then Georgia is kind of the prohibitive favorite here. Does Florida have any chance here? I mean, he's visited Florida a lot, but did they have any realistic chance here? Is this what just one that you sort of kick the tires and kind of hope for the best?
I think it's one of those where you kick the tires and hope for the best. Florida has been a consistent player for him. I believe it was sometime in the spring whenever he visited to check out a practice or a scrimmage or something like that. Said that Auburn, Georgia, and Florida were three schools starting to separate. He's been to all of those schools for official visits. I believe Auburn just had a midweek visit earlier this week. Georgia was this past weekend. Florida gets their shot this weekend. I believe he's also been to Alabama. He'll be at Texas next weekend. So he's going to see all of his finalists. I mean, Florida maybe third or fourth, somewhere around there at best, I'd say. That'd be my kind of guesstimation. Could a big visit impact that? Sure, we'll see how that goes. But I think he goes to Georgia. I think it's going to be hard to pull him out of the state. I think if there's a school that had the best chance of overcoming overcoming Georgia, I'd say be Auburn. I think he's visited both of those schools. I don't know if he's been to one or more than the other a little bit, but I mean, he's gotten to both of the schools around 6-7 times. So those are schools that have got him on campus a lot. He's got big relationships there. Florida is recruiting him as sort of like a big body wide receiver, like a mismatch type of player who, yes, he's a tight end. He can do some tight end things, but just the frame and the skill set, he's sort of a Kyle Pitts type player, someone that can do a little bit of everything. You can split him out wide. You can put him in the slot. He's a mismatch. He's fast enough to you know, put a move on a linebacker, and he's big enough to run through like a nickel or a defensive back. So Florida loves him. He's one of their top targets at tight end. But I feel like this is one where you have to try because he's talented, and you have to try because you really are high on him as a player. But I think it's going to be tough for Florida to pull that one.
Go ahead.
I
was going to say, you know, who on this list of people coming in this weekend, Blake, that nobody's really talking about as much as some of the others, but you think could end up in the class? Because this is a list that's pretty impressive. So there's going to be somebody that people maybe forget about. Who would it be?
I think maybe four-star edge Trent Henderson out of the Pensacola area, goes to Pensacola Catholic. And I say that just because he's had a – I don't know if odd recruitment is the way to put it, but this is a guy that is – he's had different finalists, different top schools. I think several months back, it was Auburn and USC battle. Auburn and FSU battle has been a combination there. He was just at LSU for an official visit a couple weeks ago. Comes out of that visit, Florida and LSU are his top two, but LSU leads. So there's been change, but the fact that Florida is a top two school, their edge board, we know who the targets are, or at least we have a good idea of who their targets are. Henderson is one of those guys that Florida really likes a lot. He's kind of quiet and reserved. I mean, he's not someone that if you interview him, you leave the conversation thinking like, I have no idea. I know less than what I knew going into this conversation with this guy. Florida, he does like them. He's been there about two or three times. He's done the shadow day earlier this year. I think that's whenever Florida really moved into, you know, trying to climb up this list to really having a seat at the table. LSU clearly leads, and that's something that Florida has to overcome with a really good visit this weekend. But this is a guy that, when I spoke to him earlier this week, your timeline for him decision-wise is somewhere around November. He's looking to take some official visits in the season. I believe Florida State is looking like a late August visit for him or an official visit for him. So Florida, they need a good visit because, A, they're coming in second place. But this is one where you have to have a lasting impression, too, because this is a guy that doesn't seem, at least right now, like he's anywhere close to making a decision.
Sure. And then, Blake, at this point, you know, we're halfway through June. There's this visit weekend coming up, and then there's obviously the cookout. Where do you feel like Florida's class is at this point, just in terms of the visits that they've already been able to get on campus and what's coming up, and just setting themselves up for what this class could be by the end of summer? Because I think most coaches and staffs would like to have the majority of their class in place going into the fall. Florida's at seven commitments right now. What is there a number maybe that you think fans should maybe hope that they get to before we get to the season, and how close are they to getting there?
Yeah, I don't know. There's really a set number. I always look at a class to where whenever you're coming out of this wave of June, July, anyone who's maybe lingering around there in August, you want to see where the core of your class is going into the season. High school kids are busy with their own season. College coaches are preparing for busy season. So recruiting never really goes on the back burner truly, but it's so to say it does, because these guys are focused on their seasons. So I don't know what the exact number is. I don't really even know what Florida's target number is for their class overall, like how many they want to sign at the end of the day in this 26 class. I think numbers are fluid, so that's why it makes it tough, because whatever you may think right now, I mean, last summer when we were dealing with the 25 class, it's like, oh, it's going to be a small class. Well, Florida ended up signing like 27 high school kids, so it ended up being a much bigger class. So I think we'll see. I mean, I think you at least want to be in double digits, which Florida's close to that. I think 12, 13, I don't know, somewhere around there is what you'd like to see going into that season. First, we need to see who's going to make a commitment sometime this summer, whether they've already got a date. I actually posted earlier this week on Gators Online, like the schedule of commitments for Florida targets. It has the days that they're going to do. So you kind of get an idea of who's got Florida on the short list, when they're deciding, does Florida have a shot? Are they a long shot? Can they make up ground? So I think let's see it through this weekend, because this is their last official visit weekend. Any of these guys that maybe set commitment dates, does a guy like Carson Baker, the four-star running back, or four-star defensive lineman Jarelyn McCoy, do those guys pop on their visit this weekend, making those quick turnarounds for an unofficial visit? Florida's got, like I said, Tyler Chuckium. He's going to make his decision on June 16th. Three-star offensive lineman Javari Lucas is set to make his commitment on June 16th. Florida seems to be in a very good shot, a very good space for him. He's had Florida leading for a while. He's the cousin of Fred and Kelvin Taylor, so he's got those Florida ties. There are guys setting dates, and there are some guys like a four-star edge, Jake Krules, talking about October. Trent Henderson, the four-star edge out of Pensacola, is talking about November. So do these guys eventually say, I've seen all these visits, I've done all these officials, I'm burnt out on recruiting, I'm ready to get this done? Those are things that you have to watch out for. So I think we'll have a better idea maybe as we get into July. But I think right now they seem to be on track, because Florida went into official visit season with one commit. Now they have seven. I believe it was three last week and they jumped on board. They've gotten five guys or six guys in their official visit slate there. So we'll see. They've got some momentum going in this weekend. It's just, it's hard to tell for some of these guys this weekend that are coming in for official visits, just because we'll get a better read on Sunday coming out of those visits.
All right, Blake, right now you said Florida, seven commitments. However, one of their commitments, one of the Gators' commitments, J.J. Perez, the three-star defensive lineman from Ohio, is set to officially visit the Buckeyes this weekend. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much concern should there be from a for a Florida fan right now that, you know, he may flip to Ohio State?
I'd say somewhere around 7 or 8. I mean, this is a guy that he committed to Florida on his official visit. It was his very first visit ever to Florida. He comes out of that visit. I'm a Gator. I'm solid. Canceling all these other official visits he's previously had set. It was like a week later, I think, if that. Set an official visit to Ohio State for this coming weekend. Well, earlier this week, he was there for a camp, an unofficial visit. it's hard to put a lot of stock into some of those because they're coming with teammates, you know, are they there as like a team obligation to camp, but still you get time around these coaches. You think Ohio State coaches were sitting there watching him camp saying like, oh, well, he's committed to Florida and he's here with his team. We better not talk to him. Like, no, of course they're recruiting him hard. They want to keep him in state. They were very surprised when he committed to Florida coming out of his official visit. I'm pretty concerned because he's an in-state guy. There in Ohio, right there in Cleveland area, I believe, at Glenville High School. He's making a second visit to Ohio State. He changed plans very quickly about his return or about not taking official visits. Can Florida get him back? Is this a guy that comes back to the cookout? Does he want to wait and see for like a game in the swamp to come check that out? I'm concerned just because of just what he said earlier. And granted, these kids change their minds a lot. It is what it is recruiting now. It's almost weird when guys don't take visits after the fact, but just the very quick turnaround and being the in-state school, I'm pretty concerned heading in this one, but we'll see how things go with that visit. If Florida can make it out of this visit and he goes in there and he doesn't flip or he doesn't open things up or whatever, you need to get him back for the cookout. That'd be a great kind of counter move there. And if not, he needs to be at one of Florida's first games in the season to really try to swing any type of momentum that Ohio State may build this weekend back in their favor.
All right, Blake, last thing for me, and Zach may have something as well. Zach, you want to go first? Are you good?
Go. Okay.
Just over-under on the number of commits this weekend. What do you think? I think this has got the potential to be a pretty good weekend for the Gators.
It feels like the line for me is probably 3. And I say that because I think Marquez Daniel is one that I'm watching. Like I said, I mean, what more do you need to see? You've done all your official visits. Then you've got those 2 unofficial visitors with Jarela McCoy. You've got Carson Baker there this weekend. So I feel like 3 is right there. And could there be someone that's wowed on this visit that Florida makes a big move with? Could Malik Morris decide to move things up? There are a lot of things to factor into this. We'll see once these guys get there later today on Friday, what kind of the read is as these guys go through their visits and get time around the staff and everyone there. I feel like the line is 3. I would trend towards probably I think the under maybe is where I'd go, but that's just because more of like let's wait and see. But Florida's also, I mean, if you count in Monday, like I said, Tyler Chuckiam's got his commitment date set. Jabari Lucas has his commitment date set. If you're factoring Monday into the weekend, like Florida could go on a really nice run here on the weekend.
Monday's not part of the weekend. It should be.
I know, but I'm saying
it should be part of the weekend.
It feels like it some weeks.
There's been some Monday mornings for me and Zach where it still felt like it was Sunday, believe me. But Blake, that's all I've got. Zach, did you want to add anything? Or not?
I've got 5 more questions. No, I'm just kidding. Blake, we appreciate all the intel, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Enjoy the show.
Make sure you cover you cover. Actually, Blake, make sure you cover this weekend well. But as a fan, make sure you follow Blake's coverage all weekend long. Nobody covers these recruiting weekends like GatorsOnline.com. Zach, myself, Blake, we've been doing this a long time. We say that not with arrogance, but with a belief that we cover this, it.
The in real time recruiting thread is nuts. It is nuts.
We cover like, it.
You feel like you're right in there in all these different dinners and stuff that they're having.
Yeah. So make sure you go to GatorsOnline.com. They're already rolling out recruiting coverage for this big official visit and unofficial visit weekend. Blake, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon. Maybe next week, a little recap. All right, man, that was good stuff, Zach.
Yeah,
we're lucky, man. We got him and Corey Bender, Blake and Corey Bender, that cover the hell out of recruiting. And really, there's never a day that goes by where they don't have at least, you know, 5 articles between them. We got to do an ad read before we get to the next.
Let's do that.
I'm getting texts like, I'm trying to put my thing on mute so the text alerts don't come in, but it's insane here. So,
well, let's give a shout out to Roback.com as we transition into some football talk. And there's only one way to describe Roback, and that's the best fit and best feel. For those who aren't familiar with Roback, they're completely changing the game with their incredibly comfortable activewear. They've released so many items with their newly licensed game day collection. And it's fantastic. Novel polo designs and clean hoodie and Q-zip designs from some of your favorite schools, including the Florida Gators. Nobody else on the market is pairing these level of custom designs with this quality of activewear. Roback has also been proudly leading the NIL charge, having signed partnerships with multiple college stars, past and present, and are becoming the go-to brand for college athletes across the country. Use the code GATORS20 on Roback.com for a generous 20% off all new customers. That's spelled ROBACK.com. You will get 20% off all performance polos, shorts, and more with the code Gators20.
All right. Zach, we got a few other things we got to talk about. Football scheduling, basketball scheduling, and then NIL stuff. What do you want to start with?
I want to actually start with this right here because I think this is fascinating. And you can, you know, throw it to me and I'll kind of talk about where we are. But okay. I do think the implications of some of this is just incredible to see how the sport is evolving.
All right. Well, earlier this week, actually it was last week, and I'm going to take it straight from your story. A new era of college athletics will begin this summer after a landmark ruling on Friday, following some significant changes in recent years with NIL, portal windows, unlimited transfers, and conference expansion. The NCAA will now institute revenue sharing in July and phase in roster limits. Revenue sharing is here, roster limits is here, and college sports, again, this incredible paradigm shift in the last years. I mean, it just looks and feels so much different than it did just 3-4 years ago. In this ruling, Judge Claudia Wilken approved the deal between the NCAA, its major conferences, and lawyers representing all Division I athletes. The House versus NCAA settlement ends 3 separate federal antitrust lawsuits and will pay $2.7 billion in back damages over the next 10 years to athletes who competed anytime from 2016 through the present day. So it doesn't just it doesn't just impact people moving forward. We're actually going back to kind of compensate athletes in various sports. So what are your takeaways from all this, Zach? I mean, it's a lot to kind of digest and get your arms around.
Well, first of all, the second part of that coin, in addition to the $2.8 billion, is, you know, what's going to happen moving forward with rev share. You know, athletes are going to now be able to get a piece of the pie. I think that the cap is $20.5 million for rev share that they can share with student athletes from all the major conferences. And I think what's interesting here is some of the numbers that have been reported. Football is expected to receive 75% of that $20.5 million, followed by men's basketball, which is 15%. And then for the last 10%, it's been reported different places that 5% will go to women's basketball and then 5% for the remainder of the other sports. It is my understanding that I don't know if Florida is going to allocate 5% to women's basketball, but at the very least, it's my understanding that Florida baseball program will be third in that pecking order of the funds that are received from rev share. So that's one thing to note, and how that money gets split within the rosters and how it could be different from one school to the next. That's all fascinating. I also think it's fascinating, Keith, about this $2.8 billion settlement where they're going to pay all these different athletes. That sounds like it could go over smoothly, and that, you know, a lot of these recent stars since 2016 will now get a payday for what they did competing at the collegiate level. But I cannot imagine that everybody's just going to take that check and say, okay, like, I think that there is some potential there for some athletes to feel like they have not been compensated what they were due. Especially if some of the numbers get out as to what certain athletes are getting paid back by the NCAA, who is responsible for paying this, by the way. So, you know, if there's a star from 2018 or 2022 that gets a check from this and feels like they were entitled to more, does that lead to more lawsuits? Can it? Is there an agreement in place where they got to take whatever they get and they can't pitch a fit? That would be interesting to see. But I'm more fascinated with how this rev share gets split up between teams and then amongst rosters. And is it different from one school to the next? Is one school going to be selling athletes on, hey, we give our athletes this much in rev share?
Yeah.
Is NIL then going to have to be the equalizer and offset some of those differences? Is Duke and Kansas going to give more to their men's basketball program than schools in the SEC? I mean, I'm just – there's so many layers there, Keith.
Yeah, and so first of all, I want to make three comments here. And I want to say what I think every Gator fan is thinking right now, and I think you'll back me up with Zach. It's about time Felipe Franks got paid. I think there's any doubt about that.
Oh, man. I mean, hey, a lot of these guys, you know, Kyle Trask, you got to think he's going to be getting a nice little check.
Hey, look, every little bit helps. You know what I mean? That was interesting. How did they pick how many years back they would go?
How do they decide how much each guy gets? Is it how many games you started? Is it how many games you played?
Yeah. Well, you got the roster limits are significant. And I think that's the thing more than anything. Yeah, coaches have already learned. Yeah, coaches have already learned to live with it, the paying of players and how are the collectives going to be molded into this, right? But roster limits, that's a big deal. And then also, listen, guys and gals, the Title IX lawsuits are going to be flying. This is just the start, okay? This is just, yeah, they say Pandora's box. I think this is what they mean. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, Zach, what's so funny to me is you go back just 5 years ago when there were athletic directors out there and presidents and coaches that really didn't think NIL was going to be much. They thought it would be a guy getting a car here or there. You know, now you've got guys making $500,000, $600,000, $700,000 a year to play football after school.
Some of those elite guys that are making those deals, Keith, let's be clear. These NIL deals are not going to stop because the rev share starts.
No.
It may look different. And there may not be as many NIL deals out there because they're not going to have to compensate and fund rosters the same way that they have because they have rev share now. But NIL is not going away because, let's say it's 20.5 million is the number, Keith, that we've been expected. And it's reported that football is going to receive 75% of that. Well, if you're getting a top five quarterback, you're paying $3 to $4 million just in NIL deals. Or at least that's what it's been, right? So if NIL deals were just completely not in the picture anymore and you're going off of those rates, just your quarterback alone would take up a huge percentage of the money that you have for football. And then you got the million that you're paying a top receiver or a top – pass rusher. And I mean, there's a lot of guys that are making a million, right under a million. It's not going to take long for that money to go away. So you're still going to have NIL to compensate and be the difference maker in some of these decisions and deals.
Well, and then if certain guys aren't making much, same thing is going to hold true. They're going to leave. They're going to go somewhere that is going to pay them more. And I wonder what we don't know is this going to lead to more people entering the transfer portal?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I mean? So there's so much unknown. It's a wild era right now, although it becomes a little bit more, it's the new normal. And right now where we would have been shocked by something like this 5 years ago. And now it's kind of like, okay, makes sense. I see where they're headed.
And I guess I don't know, Keith, but you know, we had reported Gators Online that we were hearing 3 million was going to be the number for men's basketball. And that's what it's looking like it's going to be if it's 15% of 20.5 million. Are other schools and other conferences able to up that percentage? I mentioned Kansas and Duke, who we'll get into Duke, by the way. But are other men's basketball programs in schools that are blue bloods, are there universities going to allocate more money to men's basketball? And if so, is that going to put the Floridas and the SEC schools that are sticking at that 15%, is that going to put them at a disadvantage? And if it does NIL have to make up for that disadvantage? I mean, these are just questions and talking points, but it's just it's fascinating how it's all going to work. And then what happens to the bottom, sports and how do you make sure everybody, all the athletes are getting something and all the sports are getting taken care of while also making sure that your revenue sports are able to compete and keep making revenue. So
if you're a booster out there, if you're somebody with a lot of money like you, Zach, and a school approaches you, who do you give your money to? You know, do you give it to the, now that they have revenue share, do you just give it directly to the school? Do you give it to the collectives? And I'm curious to see how the collectives now work with the universities. I mean, seems like the really good players are going to really, really benefit from this, I think.
Yeah, because they're going to be able to double dip. They're going to get the majority of the revenue share. They're going to get the biggest revenue share payments. And then they're going to get the biggest NIL.
Right. A pretty good day last Friday for DJ Lagway, I guess, huh?
And all the top flight quarterbacks. Yeah. If you're and it's not just quarterbacks, it's, you know, left tackles, pass rushers, you know, elite playmakers on offense. And, you know, I mean, those guys are, their NIL deals and their demand in that market isn't going anywhere. And the amount of collectives and boosters that are willing to pay deals to those athletes to market whatever it is that they want to market, that's not going away. Yeah. And you can't, I'm interested to see what this NIL clearinghouse, how that factors into this. Cause that's a new aspect of this along with the roster limits, which I'll mention here in a second. But you can't put a cap on how much a business or a entrepreneur or whatever wants to pay an athlete through a collective. It's America. It's a free market. You know, if Gap wants to pay Justin Bieber $20 million to be in their Gap commercial to wear their clothes, they can do that if they think he's worth it. So if one of these collectives wants to continue to pay X athlete X amount of dollars to be in this commercial to, you know, promote this business, and he gets a big fat check from it, you can't put a cap on that. So that's always going to continue to be exploited. What you can't put a cap on is the rev share.
Yeah. And the whole thing is just, I don't know. I'm still trying to process it. Again, it's become the new normal, and yet I still, where's it headed, I guess, is the big question. And again, like I said, Title IX at some point is going to be, you know, going to rear its head here. And I know people have different opinions on that, but so anyway, we'll see how that goes. Anything else you want to add on that, Zach?
Yeah, I'll just read this statement from Scott Strickland just to make sure we include his comments. He said, the University of Florida Athletic Association welcomes the recent court ruling allowing schools to directly share revenue with student athletes. This decision marks an important step forward for college athletics, and we remain committed to supporting Gator athletes on and off the field. Beyond financial opportunities, the UAA will continue to provide world-class training, academic support, and career development to help our Gators succeed during their time at UF and well beyond. And I think it's important to say this, and I do want to mention the roster limits, Keith. Regardless of how you feel about NIL, which is wild, wild west, and regardless of how you feel about transfer portal, guys jumping schools, and what this new age of college sports has become, I think most people, and it should be everybody, but I think most would agree that this right here should have always been happening. Athletes should have always been getting a piece of the pie and part of the revenue share. I think regardless of how that impacts NIL and everything else, like, this is a long time coming and long overdue. And as Scott Strickland said, they welcome this. Obviously, this is taking money out of the pockets of the major conferences and its universities, but the athletes are putting in the work to generate all this revenue. They should have always been getting a piece of the pie, and it's about time that's happening.
Well, I don't have a problem with them getting a piece of the pie. What I do have an issue is when people think that money was going directly to the libraries, or so you and I could have better teachers and all that stuff. The money was always, yeah, it was not never, it was always, you know how you know it didn't go to the universities and stayed in the athletic departments? Because whenever they would give money to the universities, they always let you know. There was always a press release from the university. We just kicked $2 million back into the schools. You know what I mean? So these athletic departments wouldn't function. There would be no athletic departments. There would be no revenue structure for these athletes without the universities. Otherwise, they would be minor league sports that nobody would give a damn about. And I think they need to never lose sight of that. And I think if they do lose sight of that, they need the universities. The universities don't need them. There are a lot of schools out there that don't have athletic programs that function just fine.
Yeah.
So at some point, I'm just curious to see where it's all headed. I'll just say that. It's a great thing for the athletes. It's never been a better time for an athlete. You know, back in the late 60s, early 70s, Carlos Alvarez, the Cuban Comet, the great Florida receiver, All-American receiver, he was kind of at the forefront of a lot of this. 50-plus years ago, Zach, he was trying to start a union for athletes, and it was a national story. And to see how far it's come, and it is great that they're getting something, and they're actually getting a lot more than something. But I do disagree with a couple things, not with you, but just with the premise that they never got anything. The value
of
the value of education was always enormous. But you know, as you and I would walk around these athletic departments, there were a lot of people with six-figure salaries that you really didn't necessarily know what they did. And that mean they weren't working hard, but what was their function? But with the quarterback, he was actually somebody bringing in revenue to the athletic
department.
So, So I know I talk in circles here, but yes, it's great to see that. And I hope they put the money away, most of it, and live well here. I always cringe a little bit when you go on Instagram and you see one of the young guys and he's spent his money on things that maybe, maybe not the wisest purchases, but it's kind of like when you give money to somebody homeless on the side of the road, Zach. Once you give it to them, it's theirs. They can do whatever they want with it. You know what I mean? But it's just such a unique time. But again, I am curious to see where it all
goes. And to that point, it's important that they're going to always continue to get advising and things like Gatormade, because these guys are getting more money than they've ever touched, and that more than college athletes before have ever been able to have access to. So you do hope that, because of these programs that they have in place, these guys are being smart with their money. And last thing on this topic, if you haven't read the story at GatorsOnline.com, the proposed roster limits are 105 for football, 15 for men's and women's basketball, 34 for baseball, which is a huge increase, 28 for men's and women's soccer, 25 for softball, and 18 for volleyball.
All right. Interesting stuff. Before we move on, I want to ask everybody to hit the like button down below. Jack, do you want to put that banner up? You got it nearby?
Yes, I do. I do. Like right
button,
here.
Subscribe button, leave a comment. Usually the comments are positive most of the time. But we appreciate everybody stopping by. Obviously, make sure you go to GatorsOnline.com. There's always good deals to jump in and see what we got cooking. Look, I mean, football season is right around the corner. No pressure, Zach, but we're going to need a lot of off-season intel from you in the next.
That's right, baby.
Look, we got SEC Media Days coming up. We're not done with official visits. July may be a dead period in terms of hosting visitors, but that's when a lot of the commitments come. That's when a lot of the intel's flowing, off-season workouts, yada, yada, yada. A lot of good stuff cooking. So go to GatorsOnline.com. And in the interim, hit the like button and the subscribe button. Zach, before we get into the last couple topics, do you want to do another ad read?
Yeah, let's get our last one out of the way here and give a shout-out to our guy Andy over at MyPerfectFranchise.net, who is a big baseball fan. And from his line of work, he's seen firsthand the fantastic traits baseball players bring to the franchise world. And Andy's offering a donation of $500 to $1,000 to Florida's Baseball NIL Collective if anyone from our site purchases a franchise through MyPerfectFranchise.net. He thinks it's a great opportunity to help the UF baseball program, and now's the perfect time to contact Andy to learn more. His services are 100% free, and he's here to help if you have any questions about business ownership. Head to MyPerfectFranchise.net to learn more. You can call or text Andy at 404-973-9901. And obviously, an important time for Florida baseball, Keith, because since the last time we did a show, the Gators have, landed a big commit from the high school ranks, a top 50 MLB prospect, who now I think everybody's going to wait and see what happens to him next, Aaron Watson. And then they've also had a few more guys enter the portal, and now we kind of wait to see who are some of the targets that they fill up with. But if you want to help in Florida's efforts there, hit up Andy and check out what he's got going on at MyPerfectFranchise.net.
Yeah, baseball team's been active. Been active.
Oh, man.
Yeah, been active in the portal. Been, they're making some moves. And That's usually what happens when an elite program has a season that's not one of its best. Obviously, they had a lot of injuries, but you see that happen a lot. You knew Kevin O'Sullivan, that guy doesn't stay down long. We know that.
Oh, no. Legend. And they got a lot of targets still that they're, you know, working on. And, you know, we'll be tracking it all at Gators Online.
Yeah, it's a bad season for him. He still made it to an NCAA regional. You know, I mean, that's that's how high the standards are. All right, scheduling news. You want to go basketball or football first, Zach? What do you think?
I guess we'll go. We can mention football since it's what's coming up next, and there's not as much to talk about there. But I think for most Florida fans will rejoice. I saw some people say, "Well, I like the noon games." We as writers like the noon games because that means we get to be done working early and have people read our stories a little bit sooner. But we are not going to have many noon games, if any, this season, and there won't be any in the swamp this year. That is now official after the league announced the flex times this week for Florida's 2025 schedule. We already knew some kickoff times. For the first 3 weeks of the season. The only one that we still don't know is Miami. And that is an ACC-controlled game. They will announce the time and network for that. But that's the only game that could still be at noon. But that is at Miami. So every game in the swamp will either be a 3:30 or 4:15, 4:30 kick or a night game. And that'll still be determined for the Texas game, as well as the Tennessee game and the Florida State game. The homecoming game against Mississippi State will be at will start in between 3:30 and could start as late as 4:30. So somewhere in that window, we already knew the times for Long Island. The season opener is 7 p.m. Week two against USF is 4:15, and then the Gators have a night game in Baton Rouge, Death Valley. For their SEC opener at LSU on September 13th. So that's what we know now for Florida's schedule, along with obviously Florida, Georgia, another 3:30 kick in Jacksonville, and then Florida's road trips to Kentucky and Ole Miss also fall in that same flex time windows of either 3:30 to 4:30 or 6 to 8 p.m. So the Gators could be playing some night games down the stretch if they if they and their opponents are ranked where they need to be, but at the very least, they'll have a 3:30 kick. No noon games though, which I feel for the fans, Keith. I mean, it's brutal to have a noon game in the swamp.
Yeah, I think you're gonna see a lot of Arkansas and Vanderbilt games in this coming season. Yeah. But it's funny because the SEC, obviously, it's much hotter in the South. No duh, right? But the Big Ten's got a kind of a different TV philosophy, and they get away with it because it gets a little cooler there, obviously. But they put a lot of their big games at noon. It's sort of the exact opposite of what the SEC does, the big noon kickoff. But so that's interesting. All right, Zach, basketball scheduling. Man. This is what you wanted, right? You win a national title, man. You got the target on your back. But the way to stay up there, once you hit that high level, you are a marquee program. All of a sudden, you're not having to call people to set up games. They're calling you, right? They're calling you, and Florida is lining up one incredible non-conference schedule in addition to what's already going to be a fantastic SEC schedule.
That's right. Zach,
just this week, I'll let you talk about it, but just this week, a big, big addition to the non-conference schedule, which was already fantastic, was added with the release of the SEC-ACC Challenge games. I know we're looking forward to this one, man.
Yeah, this there's already a lot of games that we were looking forward to on this schedule for the Gators next year. Obviously, the season opener against Arizona and Las Vegas is going to be big time. The rematch with UConn in Madison Square Garden is going to be fantastic. But now we learned Florida's opponent for the ACC-SEC Challenge, and the Gators are going to Duke. And that is their first time there since 98, excuse me. So obviously an incredible place to go play, an incredible matchup, and just adds to what's already a very impressive non-conference schedule for the Gators. Obviously, they're also going to play Florida State on November 11th is the reported date there. And then the Gators will also be going to San Diego during Thanksgiving week for the Children's Invitational. And they're going to, the other teams that are going to be taking part in that tournament are Providence, TCU, and Wisconsin. So just some great looks for the Gators before they get into conference play. But man, to play at Duke, to play against UConn at Madison Square Garden, to play against Arizona in Las Vegas for the season opener. I mean, you can't ask for some more marquee matchups. And don't forget, or should I say, maybe you should realize, because I don't think you have had a chance to forget, that game against Arizona, Keith, will include one Bryce James, who is the son of LeBron James, and this will be his first collegiate game ever against the Florida Gators. So unless he's redshirting, I don't think he will. He'll be out there playing against the Gators, and who knows, maybe LBJ will be in the building.
I think that I think Todd Golden, Florida's coach, and Arizona's coach are friends. They used to be both be in that conference, that St. Mary's and Gonzaga.
Okay.
Right. I believe they know each other pretty well. Look, Arizona's a great program, but think about this. Let's see. So the 2025 season just ended, Zach. So I guess that means there's been 26 national champions this century, right? From 2000.
Yeah.
Michigan State in 2000 beat Florida, to Florida this past spring. Duke has won three this century. Florida's won three, and UConn's won five. That's 11 of the 26 national champions right there. Okay, so elite matchups. Cameron Indoor Stadium, Florida was absolutely annihilated there when it went there in the 90s, in 1998. But it was a team, a young Florida team that Billy Donovan was building. They were getting there. And the next December was December of 1999. Well, what happened that season? 99-2000, Florida went to its first Final Four under Billy Donovan and second Final Four as a program. He was building a program, needed those types of challenges. Now Florida is at the mountaintop, and Duke's always playing these games. They get them. And now Florida's getting them again. Florida was getting them for a while, Zach. Don't forget that. They were playing the Arizonas of the world a lot, and Duke and those schools, Michigan State, non-conference teams. And now you're seeing this whole thing. Florida is back in the picture as being a program that everybody wants to schedule.
Oh, yeah.
That Duke game. So that's an away game, obviously. That's going to be wild. And I'll talk about Cameron Indoor Stadium in a minute for anybody that hasn't been there. The UConn game, I mean, that's Madison Square Garden. That's a home game for UConn pretty much, okay?
Sure.
And then Arizona and Las Vegas. Yeah, Arizona's got a very passionate fan base. I wouldn't say that Vegas is particularly close to Tucson, which obviously is at the southern end of the state. But
closer than Gainesville, though.
Closer than Gainesville. and so that's more of a neutral side game. But those are going to be great tests. Florida obviously is returning arguably the top front court in college basketball. And you know what's funny, Zach? I interviewed Jimmy Dykes of ESPN recently, and he said early in the season, the front court's going to probably have to carry the back court a little bit for Florida, but they've got the front court to do it. And he said, I love this back court. They're just going to need a little time. And he said, this was 2 weeks ago when I interviewed him. I wrote about it this week. He said, watch Todd Golden go out and put together a great schedule to make sure that backcourt is tested early so it's ready for conference play.
Yeah.
Sure enough, since that time, we get the schedule. Now, we already knew they were going to play Arizona. I think the UConn game has been added since then, or right around that time. And now this is the big one, because this is going to really test the nerves of the guys as well. And you know, Alex Condon and those guys, you know, the front court, they just went through all that in the NCAA tournament. There ain't nothing like what I just watched it the other day, the end of that Texas Tech Florida game. I've never seen anything like that before. So they have been there. But for Xavien Lee, the Princeton transfer point guard, Boogie Fland, Arkansas transfer point guard, yes, he's played in big arenas, but, you know, but maybe not on that, maybe nothing like that yet.
Sure.
And then A.J. Brown from Ohio. I mean, you know, and then the freshman, C.J. Ingram, Alex Lloyd. What a test this is going to be for the Florida program. Doubt. You want to win those games, but the key is how much do you learn from it? Zach, have you ever been to Cameron Indoor Stadium, indoor, outdoor, anything? You ever seen them?
I have not.
It looks, when you drive onto the Duke campus, it looks like it would just be a 100-year-old engineering building. You wouldn't know it is a tiny little sign out front, this big, that says Cameron Indoor Stadium. And our buddy Jerry Hamilton, who works in this business, and I were in Durham once, and we drove right up in front of Cameron Indoor Stadium, parked right there. It was the middle of the summer. It was open. There was nobody in there. Zach, we walked in and we shot the basketball on the floor of Cameron Indoor Stadium.
Dang.
And it smells exactly like a 100-year-old arena. You would think a 100-year-old arena smells like. And it's just so surreal. There's nothing. There's no bells and whistles at all. None.
Wow.
None. And it is just, it's so awesome. And I'm excited for Todd Golden.
Yeah, he grew up a Duke fan.
I'm excited for him. I'm excited for his staff. I'm excited for these players. That's one of those things. Okay, yeah, we won a national title. Well, tell me some other things you remember about playing. Well, we went to Duke that one time. You know what I mean? I think that's – they go to Rupp a lot, but you don't go to Duke all the time. You know what I mean?
No.
There's something – Rupp's great, but there's just something about Cameron Indoor Stadium. I mean, it is the cathedral of college basketball, right? I mean, it is. So what a moment. And also – the last time they were there, Florida didn't have a single national title, and Duke was sort of up in that mountaintop.
No doubt.
Now you're talking about two teams. UConn's got five titles this century, like I said. The next, who's number two? There's a tie for second, Zach. North Carolina, Duke, and Florida. Tied for second. I mean, that is the stratosphere that this program is. I know I wax about poetic about this all the time, but I just can't get over the fact that this program that used to suck is now in that
conversation.
I mean, it blows you away. It blows you away. They're on even footing when they go there. In fact, you got to get, I mean, Florida just won the title.
Favorite. Yeah.
They just won the title. So it's what a moment for those guys. And then the rest of the schedule is just insane. And then also we need to point out, Zach, that they're going to play two games against Kentucky this year, just like the old days.
That's right. That's so, right. Yeah. Florida, That got ruined last year, only going to Lexington, and it was something that Todd Golden was looking forward to for this schedule coming up. Would it be just one game again, or would they get a home and home? And he made sure one time that when we talked to him about it that they better be coming to Gainesville if it's just one game. But they'll be coming to Gainesville and Lexington. Obviously, that'll be an intriguing matchup with the Denzel Aberdeen angle there. But regardless, man, that SEC slate is going to be incredible once again. And you're right, Keith. This what they've done in non-conference is obviously give fans and media great basketball to watch, but also sets this team up to go into league play.
Yeah, and I think what you're going to see now is in recent years, you've seen a lot of good mid-majors on the schedule, right? And I think now – and obviously some elite teams too, but now you've got some real – a high number of elite teams. I think now because you've added those teams, you don't have to play those dangerous mid-majors anymore. You can actually play Georgia State Teachers College and South Carolina Tech, and nobody's going to say anything. So, it's just fun. What they did last season was so phenomenal and so enjoyable for people like us and for the fans. And so this is just an extension. And this is kind of a reward. This is a reward. A lot of people didn't really tune in until Florida got off to that great start last year. Now they're going to be tuning in very early.
Oh, yes. Oh,
very
yeah.
Very early. And, I've been interviewing all these ESPN analysts, Zach, Jimmy Dykes particularly, and Seth Greenberg, and they both, and I'm going to write about this next week, they're both convinced Florida's going nowhere. They don't think Florida is going anywhere. And in fact, I believe it might have been Seth Greenberg. I can't remember which one of the two said, this may just be the start. That's how highly they think of Todd Golden, and they're kind of. They've had deep conversations with him. They both know him very well, and they know a lot of guys. They know a lot of guys. Seth Greenberg actually coached at Miami, by the way, years ago when Norm Sloan was still the coach of Florida. He says he's got a lot of stories to tell me down the road, so I'll report back to everybody. But these guys, that's all they do is talk to coaches, and Todd Golden obviously just won a title. No kidding, he's smart. We get that, but they are really impressed. A lot of guys won titles. They are really impressed with this dude. And I think that's
Well, and I mean, we'll mention it here at the end just to kind of conclude the show. But Florida's summer workouts are underway now for men's hoops, obviously, with the football program as well. They started regimen workouts. I would encourage Florida fans to go check out their socials, Gators men's basketball, Gators football. They posted some videos on there. Just some teasers, but it's a minute of action that you can see these guys for the first time together, especially the basketball team. And obviously the football team's been putting in work throughout the offseason. They just started the summer portion of their regimen workouts. But for the basketball team, this is the first time this group has done anything together starting on Monday. They held their first summer workout. It included five new players that have joined the program, the three top 100 transfers, obviously, and then the two top 40 high school recruits that they added to the roster. Just incredible additions across the board. Obviously, the transfer class led by Boogie Flan, who was the number 7 overall transfer in the On3 industry ranking. So it's going to be interesting to see how things played out this summer, because as Todd mentioned in the story that I put up at Gators Online, they're going to use this summer and these workouts to really figure out what they got, how these guys play well together, what their strengths are. And just as a little teaser for everybody that's made it through an hour of this show, as a reward, I'm giving you guys a little bit of a heads up. Make sure you stay locked with Gators Online next week, because we're going to be able to see at some point a summer workout, and watch this team for the first time. So we'll get to talk to some players afterward as well. So we'll have coverage from that, but we'll have a live thread going on Gators Online with everything that's happened in the facility. So make sure you stay locked in for that.
Zach, last thing before we go, I'm looking at the schedule. November 29th, this coming season, November 29th is the Florida State football game. If Florida makes it to the SEC championship game, obviously you and I will be heading up to Atlanta, probably taking a party bus up there. But if not, that next week, Florida Duke. You gonna let me ride with you, Zach?
Listen.
My man, I'll drive, you know.
If they make Atlanta, is there any way we could still do both?
I think we could do both. I'll drive. I'm going. I'm going to be begging Zach, is what I'm trying to tell him. I'm going to be begging Zach.
You don't got to beg me to go.
It's Krzyzewskiville with him. But just to see that, what a spectacle. Hey, look, there are people out there that think Florida is a dark horse to make that SEC championship game. So it could be an exciting time for Florida athletics.
Listen, Keith, you know, we usually don't travel this much for basketball, and especially not in non-conference play. But, man, like, we got to take advantage of some of these games. Like, you don't get many chances to go Madison Square Garden for a Florida UConn matchup. You don't get chances to go see Florida play at Duke. If you're a Florida fan, obviously you're going to be probably traveling a lot in the fall to see some of these football games. But if you can find a way to make it to one of these games and you're in the area or in the Vegas area and go to the season opener, like, check it out, man. This is a chance to be another contender, and we can't wait to see them take the court.
Yeah, you know, you think about the four or five most famous arenas in indoor arenas in sports in America. Cameron Indoor, Madison Square Garden might both be in that top five. So going to be a fun ride. All right, that will do it for this edition of the Gators Online Show. Make sure you hit the like button and the subscribe button below. Leave a comment. Go to GatorsOnline.com to check out all of our great official visit weekend coverage primarily from Blake Alderman and Corey Bender this weekend. Zach and I have a lot of other stuff as well. That will do it. And
thanks to Blake for coming on.
That's right. We appreciate Blake coming, and we'll do it again soon. Zach, thank you, man. Have a good weekend, buddy.
Take care, everybody.